Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Captain?
Not here.
Captain?
Report.
Signatures detected.
Shields up.
Signatures detected.
Red alert.
Context Starfleet Command.
What's happening?
Context Starfleet Command.
Delay that order.
Context Starfleet Command.
This is the captain.
Context Starfleet Command.
Get out of my chair. Chair.
We have engaged the Klingons.
Klingons? Those are Klingons? What
the hell is Welcome to the greatest... Discovery. It's a new Star Trek podcast from the makers of The Greatest Generation. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison. Big episode. It's The Greatest Discovery. Season 1, Episode 8 of Picard, but also our Max Fun Drive episode. Our first of two. For now, do you want to get into this episode, Adam?
Got to get into it, Ben. I know penultimate is the next to last. What is the third to last?
Oh,
what does that mean?
Air of penultimate?
Yeah, it's the air of penultimate episode of the first season of Star Trek Picard. It's episode 8, and it's called Broken Pieces.
We saw this kind of techno Stonehenge. We saw glimpses of this in the promo last week, but we start on this planet where sort of a monument called the Admonition has been left by an ancient alien race. We don't know what they're called, but a bunch of Lady Romulans who are, I guess, kind of, I got the sense that they were sort of Jat Vash initiates or like they're applying. This is the job interview, and if you can make it through this, you can be a full-fledged Jat Vash.
I've done job interviews that went this poorly.
You came out and just smashed your own face with a boulder.
I feel like if you're writing this episode, there's some work you need to do before you go into production. And I think one of them is cross-referencing the names of things with emo and metal bands that might already exist.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things is the name of this planet. It's called Grief World.
Really?
Yeah. It's Aya, the Grief World.
Wow.
And I just feel like if you were to look in the used bin of a Sam Goody or a warehouse music.
Nobody listening is
going to
know what a Sam Goody is, Adam.
I think if you look in the A section, you're going to find Aya, the Grief World. In there at a tremendous value.
Yeah. First track on the record, The Admonition.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's the single.
The all-ladiness of this ceremony made me wonder if the Coat Malat know something about this as well.
Because, great question.
Because they're famously a female-oriented group.
I thought it was also interesting that outside of Ramda, all of the Northerners eat shit in this scene. The Northerners can't take what they're seeing in a way that the Southerners seem more able to.
This is another question, though. Like, Ramda looks like she's in bad shape after this, but maybe not as bad of shape as the one that immediately blows her brains out with a disruptor.
Well, I mean, you and I have been married and in long-term relationships for a long time. I think anytime you're partnered with a woman who cuts her own hair, I think that's a sign that there's some deep emotional struggle happening within a person. So while Ramda is one of the few survivors of this incident, I think she's pretty scarred by it.
The fact that she is damaged much more, though, by her experience having been assimilated was on my mind. Mm-hmm. And the fact that she was assimilated leads me to believe that the Borg are aware of this world and aware of the things that she saw in this vision.
Yeah.
So that that seems like a big story piece that, you know, is only implied by this, but
I am
not discussed.
We can talk about predictions later on, but I am fully expecting Seven of Nine to drive the Borg cube all the way to this planet.
Just smash right into it.
This scene was pretty wild. A pretty intense scene of self-mutilation on everyone's parts.
Mm-hmm.
You get an understanding of Ramda's relationship to Rizzo here as well. And also Commodore O's instrumentality in the whole thing.
Right.
As the professor of Electro Stonehenge Studies, she has gathered all these people together, and Rizzo and Ramda being two of them, Ramda being the adopted aunt of both Rizzo and Narek.
Right. How'd you like to go to a job interview and another person waiting in the waiting room is your mom, basically? Your adopted...
I sort of guessed that they went together to this thing, but you're right. Maybe it was random.
Yeah. It's like, whoa, shit.
Awkward. We smash directly from this to the artifact where Rizzo is at Ramda's bedside. Mm-hmm. And this is another, like, the most emo part of the episode is the realization that Ramda broke the cube with the depths of her despair.
Yeah.
And that's... that's pretty dark, right? Like, go ahead and assimilate me, but you're not going to like what you take.
Yeah, it's...
You don't want to be with me, babe. I am way too sad.
It's a little bit reminiscent of the thing that they contemplated with Hugh, right?
Yeah.
Like, send him back with a
flush
with
a cherry
virus.
Bomb down the toilet.
Yeah, and Ramda was that computer virus.
Yeah. Yeah, and Rizzo sort of hypothesizes what might have happened if it had been her ship that had been assimilated and not Ramda's, thinking that she would have been better at taking the hit.
Yeah.
But I kind of doubt it.
Hard to know.
Yeah. There's like that look of disgust that Rizzo has. Like, she's very affectionate to Ramda at the bedside, but then when she like curls the hair back behind her head, I think she's a little bit squicked out by all of the...
Yeah.
All the implants.
The it should have been me, not you thing is a...
It's Borg survivor's guilt.
Borg survivor's guilt. But also, I feel like the way she plays it is she feels like she should say it, but doesn't really believe it.
One of the holes in this episode that I wanted to ask you about was like when the XBs rise up and attack Rizzo, where is Ramda in this moment? They'd never cut back to her.
Yeah. I don't know. Is Ramda team XB or is Ramda like a vegetable at this point and doesn't do anything?
I don't know. Like when all those Romulan ships warp away, I'm like, they home alone Ramda on the artifact.
Ramda!
Meanwhile, on that same artifact, the ROMs have descended onto Elnor's position, and they almost bring him down.
We get some resolution on why the Ranger medallion was where he went, because they mentioned that this is actually Hugh's office, so that's why that thing was in there.
Like a lot of people who go to events and have a certain type of career. He's got his credentials hanging from a doorknob, an array of business cards in a drawer. And that's where Elnor found the Fenris Rangers dog tag that he called. But what's interesting about the dog tag is that it only called Seven of Nine.
Yeah, it's an I've fallen and I can't get up and I need a extremely violent XB to come shoot everyone for me.
Were you hoping for some more decap attack here? I just sort of assume that Elnor's finishing move at all times is going to be taking heads off.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like you do that a couple too many times and it will probably start to get like laughable and old.
That's fair.
But
nice restraint then.
Yeah. This is a dangerous pair, right? Seven and Nine and Elnor being like let loose on this cube
is going to rack up a big Romulan body count really quickly.
I really love how they don't play to the emotional middle at all. Like, they fight as hard as they love. Because at the end of this, it's big time hug energy.
Definitely a hug that Seven was not expecting or prepared for. But yeah, like Elnor is like, he's still kind of a kid, you know?
Yeah.
He's just like, and he's super honest. He's super happy to see her.
You've got to believe that he is more trusting or affectionate or whatever toward a woman at this point, right? Like, if it was a dude, Fenris Ranger, I've got to believe maybe there would be a different physical reaction to their presence. But I think because Elnor was raised by women, women are most of the important people in his life. I think that's significant.
We are aboard the La Serena. This is the moment that Picard and Soji get beamed up from Nepenthe. And Rios is like almost catatonic when he sees Soji. Like, it really floors him.
He sounds pretty congested in this scene.
Yeah.
Like his ears are plugged up.
And seeing Soji is like kind of the last straw for him.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, all right, Picard, I've put up with enough of your bullshit, but this is going to be the last thing. Like, I'm basically dropping you off at the next thing.
You come back here, you bring her. You don't bring any leftover pizza. You had the opportunity to bring fresh tomatoes back.
Right.
You didn't do that.
Mm-hmm. I didn't get to go down there and get big hugs from Riker and Troy.
Yeah.
I'm just up here being my emotionally scarred self.
JL kind of turns the corner here. He's ready to re-engage Starfleet. He wants a channel opened to command, and he wants to be taken to a deep space station.
Yeah.
He's not going to be rogue anymore.
No.
And I think it's because he needs help now more than ever. He knows he can't be by himself on this mission.
Yeah, and he's also like de-risked the proposition.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of the variables that he was giving as potentially dangerous when he met with Clancy the first time were just speculation. And now he like actually knows for sure that there's a evil Romulan plot afoot.
Yeah.
And when he, you know, goes into this meeting the second time, he can fill in his PowerPoint with a lot more evidence-based claims.
This isn't anything that he ran by Soji, though, because as soon as this plan is hatched, Soji's like, WTF.
Yeah.
And then Raffi enters the scene and is like, WTF-er. Like, pulls out a sidearm.
Yeah, Raffi.
She is not into this.
Raffi thinks Picard just only brings young women who are Tal Shiar double agents aboard.
Right.
And does not trust Soji. She's kind of put things together on the Dr. Jurati tip and is super distrusting of Soji. Picard manages to kind of put his body between Raffi and Soji and get Raffi to back off for now. And then I love this. He's like, all right, Soji, let me go find you a room. And he like totally hover hands her. Like, he knows that she doesn't trust him yet, so he doesn't go for the physical contact.
He Keanu Reeves in a in a selfie.
Yeah.
Yeah, good job by him.
Yeah, good job.
Respecting the space.
Yeah, yeah.
You never know what's going to be a trigger for someone.
Yeah, and you know, she has been triggered. And, you know, if he breaks that touch bubble, there's a strong chance that she just snaps his neck, right?
This episode has a lot of storytelling baton passing.
Yeah.
And this begins in this moment because we jump right to Six Bay, and it's the EMH that helps tell the story of the drug that Jurati ingested. So Raffi begins the story, the EMH continues the story, and then back and forth they go talking about how Bruce's injuries weren't life-threatening, that he was shut off against his will, that it was Jurati that caused his death.
Yeah, Jurati is, you know, not a pro here and did not really cover her tracks. And the fact that the medical hologram is able to incriminate her here is, you know, the biggest evidence of that. I liked it. It made me wonder a lot about the EMH because it seems like if you've got a holographic doctor, you would want to kind of wire that right into the systems that it's working. Like, why does the doctor, you know, come into the room and ask what the medical emergency is when, you know, when Maddox is already on the bio bed and and it's aware of all these systems that are running and what exactly Jurati is turning off.
Right.
Seems like he could just be like, oh, never mind, we're not going to actually kill this guy.
Like what safeties might or might not be in place for a moment like that.
Yeah. But then, I mean, we also find out that Rios has like kind of meddled with these programs a little bit later on. So it's possible that it's just kind of a not a fully functional EMH.
So two big takeaways from this scene. One is that Jurati has been outed as the murderer that she is. And two is that Rafi strongly believes that Soji can't be trusted.
Right.
And will not be moved off of this position at this point.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
We cut to a meeting between Picard and Admiral Kirsten. Fuck you, Clancy. new friend of the podcast.
Yeah.
And she seems far more interested in what he has to share this time around than their previous meeting.
Yeah, he kind of comes in assuming that she's going to be maintaining that fuck you energy.
God, this felt so familiar to me. Like when one person's over a fight and the other person isn't,
yeah.
And they come ready to fight when fighting is not on the table.
Like Picard was dialing the phone and running the fight in his head beforehand. He'd like already had the fight a bunch of times. So he was like pre-mad at her.
Yeah.
Quixotic, paranoid.
But I also kind of wonder, like she says, like, you know, go to DS-12, wait for this squadron, sit tight. I'm wondering, like, it doesn't seem clear that this squadron is going to really be a factor in the episode in the episodes to come, but
given the distances that they would need to travel, right?
Right, but I wondered, like, can this squadron be trusted? Like, Clancy is either in with O or oblivious to what a threat O is.
And O is very specifically not a part of this conversation that they're having right now.
Yeah. I'm a little concerned that that Starfleet is still a huge liability at this point.
The feeling at the end of the scene is definitely positive, though.
Right.
There's not the minor key orchestration of ambiguity.
There's not the single brass instrument of we're in this alone.
Right. It feels hopeful. Back on the bridge of the La Serena, Rafi is talking to who she realizes after a little bit of time, the ENH, about Jurati, and gets the sense that Rios has, in a fit of frustration, activated all five of the emergency holograms and then just locked himself in his room.
Yeah.
He's so upset.
The Rafi story in this episode is a little bit like going around and like tugging on people's coattails and saying, are you Rios?
This feels like the first episode where we had a real solid B story going on concurrently with the A story. It feels like up until now, it's been all A.
Yeah. Rafi really gets her own story. And this feels more like a Soji is the A story episode than Picard is the A story. Like Picard definitely is like instrumental and important, but he doesn't feel like the main character in this episode, which is maybe the first time I've felt that way about an episode in this series.
That's fair. This is the first of several examples we're going to get of an emergency hologram beginning to say something and then hesitating and then sort of forgetting the track that they're on. And it's a frustration to Rafi, but it's also a curiosity that inspires her to gather them all up a little later.
Yeah. The clue that she discusses in this scene is the 8-star system, the octonary star system. So not a binary, but an octonary star system. And she comes up with the idea that this would be like stupendously rare. And there are some rumors in ancient Romulan lore that there is one somewhere, but it seems to have either been scrubbed from the records like Kamino in the Star Wars prequels or otherwise just total matter of legend.
Like Rafi's whole story has been about the cover-up of the Mars attack, and any little bit of information that confirms her suspicion about what actually happened there really gets her blood up. And this is the beginning of that path that she's on. She begins to believe that this octonary system is the place where the attack was conceived.
Yeah, this conclave of 8 is not a person, but a place.
Right. We cut back to the artifact really quickly to see that Rizzo has found the Fenris Ranger calling card among the dead ROMs.
Yeah, they're doing sort of Tal Shiar CSI. You know, she knows what's up.
Seven of Nine and Elnor are in the Queen Cell, and Seven of Nine gets to work computing. It's a hyper-efficient way to describe what's going on.
Yeah.
Much in the same way that Elnor had to be with Hugh to help him tell his story, Elnor is with Seven to help her tell hers, because in the Queen Cell, she's doing her computing with her hands. She's touching the screen,
yeah.
Ben, which is just like... It's so irritating to see.
We've got to get away from this. She's not spraying the hologram with bleach or anything.
She's going to leave her fingerprints all over it. But Elnor is making observations, and Seven of Nine is answering those questions. So Elnor observes that there are a number of drones on the ship still, and they seem to be blinking in a way that is troubling.
Yeah.
And what this does is it causes Seven of Nine to... trigger the cube into regenerating.
She turns it back on, which is big, scary fun.
Like, yeah.
It's fun to see this news get back to Rizzo. It's
yeah.
fun to see, like, the lightning shoot up the shaft and then all the, like, assembler insect robots, you know, start to work on the exterior.
The score turns.
Yeah. Rizzo really quickly realizes that the drones are going to be a problem for her. So she's discussing this with some of her lieutenants, and they decide that they are going to blow the drones into space.
Yeah, and then mop up the XBs concurrently.
Yeah.
Back in the La Serena mess hall, Soji and Picard are eating, and Soji is very much... projecting that teenager energy of, you don't know what it's like to eat continental breakfast when you're me, Picard. Like everything that she's doing comes with a, you don't know what it's like when you're me
yeah.
type of caveat.
I really liked this scene because it seemed like, you know, because Rafi, when she first comes aboard, is like, do you know even like what she's like?
Yeah.
Like you've had like two conversations with her at best, Picard. And this definitely feels like a, you know, okay, we had pizza at the Troy Riker's house and made a plan, but now I want to do the, like, getting to know you scene.
Right.
And he's very patient with her angsty energy. Like,
I don't know what that's like.
I really like the visual language of this scene because we're shooting through obstructions a lot.
Mm-hmm.
The camera's always moving and rotating, like we're searching, we're looking for answers, we're like that our truth is obscured by other things.
Yeah. And I really liked Picard finding a moment of introspection here. Like he starts talking about what Data was like. And, you know, she asks him what Data thought of him. And he has to sort of speculate on that.
I love how insightful Picard is in this scene about how similar he is to Data and
yeah.
his capacity for love.
Like his emotional shortcomings yeah. are actually very yeah. similar to those of Data.
You know, I was also fully functional at one time. Far fewer techniques, though.
I never bagged Tasha Yar, but that would have been inappropriate in my capacity as captain. I was much more interested in Beverly in that episode.
That moment where Soji tells Picard that Data loved him was big. And
yeah.
I really love Sir Patrick Stewart's performance in this moment specifically. Like, I looked at his hands.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see what his hands were doing?
Jack-off motion?
Yeah, there was that. But also, like, he didn't show it on his face as much as he felt like a little bit of a twitch.
Hmm. A great react in that moment.
Yeah.
I really liked how she just states it as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
And it doesn't feel like speculation. It doesn't feel like she is, you know, reassuring him or anything. She's just saying a thing she knows.
Yeah.
And it's kind of out of the blue, but it feels really earned.
It maybe feels like something she learned from Kestra.
Yeah.
You know, Kestra's openness and honesty, like childlike honesty.
Yeah.
She might have been taking for inspiration.
Yeah. And childlike honesty is one of the things they talk about in this conversation.
Yeah.
Rafi, she talks to the engineering hologram first, with whom she comes up with the idea that this octonary star system is in fact an artificial phenomenon. It's not something that happened naturally. It's some ancient spacefaring race was actually able to move eight stars into orbit around each other as a hey, get a load of this kind of object in space. And she's really off to the races. But then she starts talking to the hospitality hologram in her room, whom she is begging to turn back on the sauce because she would really like a glass of wine to celebrate her big discovery.
She did that thing where she changed her Twitter password so she wouldn't be able to log in anymore and then hid that password so well that she can't possibly use it.
Yeah, she like changed the phone number that the recovery goes to also.
Yeah. I mean, as much as we had hypothesized that maybe her substance abuse was functional in the previous couple of episodes, it looks as though she's changed her mind about that and is trying to go a little cleaner.
She's trying to go clean, but also
She doesn't trust herself.
Right.
Either.
She doesn't trust herself and is not out of the woods in terms of like having the self-control to actually resist it without help.
This isn't a John Roderick quitting smoking yet still squirreling away cigarettes in his home as a personal challenge.
Are the people that bought his old house going to just be finding cigarettes in nooks and crannies for the rest of their lives?
I have no doubt about that. The hospitality hologram sends Rafi to Rios after this scene in a dippy kind of way. Like he dips her into leaving and going into his quarters. Like he bends at the waist and she bends backwards.
Yeah. The hospitality hologram tells her like when Rios first took ownership of this ship, he like wasn't paying attention when he was going through the setup wizard and it did a self scan, which is why they all look like him.
Rios was a big fan of the Michael Keaton movie Multiplicity. Loved it.
Yeah.
It's the only movie that's on the La Serena and it's in VHS.
I got a lot.
It definitely makes him seem like pretty nuts, right? That he did that and then like didn't go back and correct the error.
I have a thought about this, which is like a visual language that movies often use when people are experiencing a mental trauma is always like the mirror, right? Mm-hmm. Like I can't even look at myself. I'm smashing the mirror. I'm disgusted by the very sight of me.
I'm cutting my own bangs.
I wonder if all of these EHs are an example of that. Like he's constantly seeing himself or versions of himself as a reminder of his own trauma. Like he might be using it like that.
I like that read. And a thought I had was that it feels safer to just have iterations of self on a starship where, you know, his primary association with space is losing somebody that was very beloved to him. So I wondered if that was behind it.
Yeah.
I mean, we see him in his quarters going through his old stuff. He's got like the cigar box full of mementos.
This is another Starfleet Pelican case.
Yeah.
And there's a duffel inside.
Mm-hmm.
Again and again, Ben, we watch new Star Trek and we're seeing like all this merch look, the merch that's being made for this show is great. Like make all the comm badges, make the jackets, do all that stuff. But the bag category is very underserved.
When we're back to going to airports, I want this luggage.
The zip bag is killer.
Yeah.
Not to mention the Pelican case.
One of the photographs he pulls out of his cigar box is a photo of him and Captain Dr. Drew, who was the captain of the Ibn Majid, the ship that he was the first officer on. And this is a very painful memory. But another item he pulls out is a little illustration of a young Rios with somebody who is a dead ringer for Soji.
Yeah.
Imagine.
Could be no other person. Look at her.
Look at her. So hence him getting so freaked out when Soji came aboard.
When you leave Starfleet, I think you got to keep the pips. It's great.
Yeah.
Cigar box full of pips.
He's got a lot of spare pips in there.
It makes a lot of sense when they're magnetically attached to your uniform that they might accidentally fall off or get brushed off or any number of things.
Yeah.
They're like collar stays. You just always have a drawer of them.
Yeah. You can never have too many because they are going to go missing.
Yeah. Rafi rings his bell, but he doesn't let her in.
No.
Now is not the time.
He's too busy down at the bottle of Pisco to take any callers at this moment.
Back on the artifact, the thousands of Borgs are in stasis, and Elnor is like sitting at the foot of his grandpa's train set, asking him to like make all of the engines go. It's great how encouraging he is of her. And the way they're sort of talking through what the plan is.
Yeah.
He's like, you know, why don't you flip all these guys on and like set them to assimilate?
It's a bit of an ethical dilemma for Seven because she's like, well, I could, but technically I'd be invading their minds. And also I would be... I'd become the thing I hate. And I'm not sure I would be capable of walking away from it when I did it.
It's such a great moment because it's that ultimate choice, right? Choose your own survival or your chances of survival increasing, or do the thing that would compromise your integrity forever.
When you do a Venn diagram, you've got two circles overlapping, right? But then there's like the super Venn diagram where
are you talking about octo Venn diagram? Like eight circles?
What I'm talking about, Adam, is the conclave of five, because Rafi figures out each of these emergency holograms knows parts of the whole story here, but I'm not getting it from just talking to them individually. So I'm going to get them all together in Picard's room for some reason.
You're going to make the Olympic rings out of them?
Yeah. She gets the conclave of five together and kind of gets the holograms to spill the hollow beans.
Except there are very few beans being spilled, because every time an EH walks up to the threshold of any sort of useful information, they get the eye blinkies.
Yeah.
And they either walk it back or forget the train of thought that they're on.
It seems like Rios went to great lengths to make sure his holograms couldn't reveal his pain to anybody that came aboard.
It's probably as close to a fun or funny scene as we've gotten on this show so far.
Yeah, it's such a strange idea to have like as antic a scene as this about something that's this painful and to like dance around it as being that painful.
Yeah.
The Conclave of Five does not go well. We don't get a lot of satisfaction from this.
This next scene is great.
Yeah.
It's Six Bay and it's Picard bedside with Jurati. You get to see Picard's disappointment face here in a way that you rarely see. I mean, he was burned a couple of times on TNG, and then you see him kind of turn away from the door and look out his gazing window with this kind of face.
Yeah. What's coming to mind is like the time that Worf went over onto another ship and just murdered a Klingon that he had a little disagreement with.
Right.
You know, there's been some times where the TNG crew didn't live all the way up to the high standard that Picard set. This is not a Starfleet. This is a private citizen who has been roped into a scheme that is way above her pay grade. And he basically has no tools for processing what Agnes Jurati did.
The withering did not retire with Picard. He took that with him.
I like that he and Rafi and the whole crew don't know what to make of her. They're not really sure like to what extent she is an op. Like, is she being used by the Tal Shiar or is she Tal Shiar? She is much less of a, you know, like she is much less of a craven baddie than she may seem to be to them.
Yeah.
And I think that this is a great scene for him coming to understand that, but it's very much a show, not a tell.
She's pretty broken here because the suggestion that she turns herself in once they get to the starbase is immediately grabbed by her.
Yeah.
But the story that she tells about her visit with Commodore O absolves her of a little bit of the responsibility. And this goes unsaid. I think this is just for the viewer. Like, regardless of how you feel about Girardi's actions, there were extenuating circumstances. Right. And she's not explaining those in order to make herself innocent to Picard. I think she's just telling her story. And that story she tells about O visiting her and the psychic block that was put on her in the aftermath about sharing any of this.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all adding up to a pretty compelling and sad story, a story that makes you feel some empathy for Girardi and her situation. Picard knows that she was Bruce Maddox's work partner and life partner and all the rest. And so this is not lost on him that, you know, the amount of pain that she's in over this.
Can you imagine living in the 24th century and never having heard of a mind meld? She put her fingers on my face.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's a mind meld. You don't know about mind melds?
Maybe in the same way that when you choose a major and your major is like economics.
Yeah.
You're never going to take a creative writing class.
Right. You might be forgiven for not knowing that lecithin is an emulsifier if that's your focus.
Yeah. In that same way, I think she went into positronics and never looked back towards Vulcan mysticism.
Yeah. But she tells Picard basically she's seen the admonition materials and knows what the stakes are here. Like Seb Shineb, the destroyer, is the person that makes reality into hell.
There's only two tapes on board the La Serena, Ben. There's Multiplicity and Event Horizon.
Look at her, Miller.
Event Horizon's still in the plastic. No one wants to watch that movie. It's too scary.
Yeah, I mean, it's like it's the widescreen VHS tape, and it's like at this low resolution, the widescreen is just not worth it. I'd rather actually have the pan and scan.
I used to go to Suncoast Video all the time and get the VHS widescreen versions of movies. I loved them. That was so special.
Yeah. Get to see the whole thing as the director intended.
Yeah. Felt good.
320 horizontal lines of resolution.
Yeah. On my 17-inch television. There's a nice bit of baton passing with the story here too, because as they reach the conclusion of the idea of this hell being unleashed and that there is a threshold moment, and the threshold moment is a person, enter Soji.
Yeah.
Soji's there to say that she is Seb Shineb. She is the destroyer.
Mm-hmm.
It me.
Yo soy el destroyer.
That's my favorite Weezer song, El Destroyo.
Did they perform that on stage after the admonition?
Yeah.
We start intercutting pretty quickly between Rios and Raffi finally connecting and this moment between Girardi and Soji. And it's Rios recounting the sort of murder-suicide that Captain Dr. Drew pulled on the Ibn Majid. And this really like joyful, exciting moment that Girardi is having, finally meeting a synthetic person.
Right.
And
this is another aspect to her redemption, or something adjacent to Girardi's redemption.
Like, I think that there's a chance that Girardi will remain unredeemed.
Sure.
I think that this is a series that
I'm definitely not riding for her absolution.
She got a really raw deal,
mm-hmm.
and I think that there's a way for her to repent and become clean again.
Mm-hmm.
But I also wouldn't be surprised if this series takes her in the complete opposite direction and makes her a casualty of this sort of Cold War.
She's going to love getting killed by synthetics when they get to this planet. She's going to give herself up.
This is a great moment.
You can see it, right?
She loves meeting Soji so much. It's a moment that, I mean, especially having done the book on tape of the novel prequel to this series, like, this felt so big to me.
Dr. Girardi is going full John Mayer here with Soji's body wonderland. Like, she is just totally rapturous about all every little freckle and mole and imperfection.
Yeah.
She calls her a piece of art.
Yeah. She's really hitting on Soji.
Yeah, Jurati's like, so tell me about them titties. So why don't you just dump them out?
Yeah, let's see them. I'm fascinated in you from a professional standpoint.
Look, I'll start. Yeah. And then if you're comfortable, you can join in.
Rios, on the other hand, is still pissed on Pisco and still extremely distressed about the memories that this has all brought up of Captain Dr. Drew. They were in the Vite system, which is where all of this important stuff seems to be taking place.
Right.
And they took aboard an ambassador named Beautiful Flower and his young protege, Jana, who were representatives in a first contact situation. And then Captain Dr. Drew, having communicated this back to command, got a special order from Starfleet Security to murder the two people on this diplomatic mission.
It was a black flag operation, Ben. So yeah. Admiral Henry Rollins put out the hit on these two, and Captain Vandermeer did the deed.
Yeah, and then Rios flipped on him. Because he wasn't privy to the orders,
he wasn't a
apparently.
Big black flag fan back yeah. then.
And
he was more of a Misfits person.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he knows that Commodore O is amazing at bass.
Right.
So Captain Dr. Drew put a phaser in his mouth and blew his brains out, and that
For
is what
a
is
show
eating Rios.
That revels in showing that kind of stuff that
Oh, you're surprised that there wasn't a gory flashback?
Little surprised at the restraint. I'm fine with it, believe me. Don't need to see it.
Yeah.
The crosscut between this story and the Soji Jurati thing comes to a crescendo with Soji asking Jurati, "Am I a person?" This is a question that Jurati never answers.
Jurati's hesitance, I couldn't tell if it was because she genuinely doesn't have like a philosophical understanding of like whether that's even a yes or no question,
mm-hmm.
or if she like does not believe Soji is a person and doesn't want to say it to her face.
It felt a little bit like something was missing here. Like even if it was without dialogue,
yeah.
to have that question posited, and then even to get a cut to Jurati rolling it around in her mind, I think would have been welcome here yeah. because it cuts almost immediately from Soji back into that Rios conversation and its conclusion.
And then smash cut to Rizzo just slaughtering XBs with abandon.
Yeah.
We go from these two incredibly tender moments to this just like teeth jarring violence.
Rizzo is going totally John Woo on all of the XBs because yeah. she's using two phasers at the same time.
Yeah. And then, you know, getting ready to start pumping them into space when she's done with the ones that are still walking around. And this is when Seven of Nine plugs herself into the machine. She kind of forces Seven of Nine's hand here, takes the dilemma off the board. And Seven, I guess, becomes the queen of a limited single cube collective.
We are bored.
I love the detail of seeing her spine and all the plugs go in.
Yeah.
And one of them goes in the wrong way, has to be pulled out,
oh,
and then
yeah.
put back in.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean,
even the Borgs dark. Haven't perfected USB technology.
Yeah, they haven't upgraded to USB-C.
Yeah. Yeah. I love Jeri Ryan's physical acting here. You can almost feel every one of these plugs go in.
Yeah.
And then when she gets Event Horizon eyes, it's super scary. We were talking about this on the hit show Friendly Fire yeah. when we were discussing the movie War Witch. What a thing a opaque contact lens is in making someone feel a certain way about a character. And yeah. often that is fear.
Yeah, she stops seeming human in
yeah.
this moment.
Yeah, she goes full Wes Borland as soon as she's plugged in.
She did it all for the Nookie.
Yeah. This is great, But God, like she races to do this because she wants to activate all of the drones still on board. And almost concurrently, Rizzo blows them all into space.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like there have been a lot of moments in this series where I was like, oh, like I want the thing that I can't have, but holy shit, did I want to see an assimilation happen? Like I wanted,
yeah, I wanted all those little octagonal yes. pins everybody has to start going nuts.
This is 30 seconds of showtime that I think would have been super fun.
Yeah.
Like I wanted to see the beginning of a counterattack before being blown away, but we never get that.
Yeah.
Instead, we cut to the exterior and this cube is absolutely dusting space
yeah.
with its drones.
As this mass murder proceeds apace, we cut back and the whole crew of the La Serena are having a little hang around one of the tables in the lower level, and Soji and Dr. Jurati come out. I guess they're both doctors. Dr. Asha and Dr. Jurati come out.
You don't lose your doctor label for murder. They don't take that away from you.
Yeah. But actually, Dr. Asha probably never actually went to any accredited school.
Yeah.
All of her documents are fabricated, so she's not in fact a doctor.
We've reduce the doctoral fractions. We're crossing both of them out.
Yeah. So they come out and...
This is crucial that it's Soji that does this, right? Soji invites her back into the crew.
Yeah.
Like the McLaughlin group
issue one
has already begun. She's the late entry to the scene.
She's got some apologies to say. She announces to everybody, I'm going to be giving myself up to the authorities when we get to DS-12.
Feels a little bit like an intervention.
Yeah.
Like, what's Jeff Van Vonderen doing there? Picard's like, I see a lot of people at this cafeteria table that really love you a lot.
Yeah.
Let me just pull out this folded up piece of a legal pad that I've written some thoughts on.
Dr. Jurati. When you killed Bruce Maddox, you made me feel very negative thoughts about you.
I have been supporting your habit for far too long, and I want you to commit to getting help today.
They sort of talk, like group talk, this whole thing through, because like the earlier Conclave of Five, this Conclave of Five has a bunch of different pieces of one puzzle mm-hmm. that they're able to kind of all click into place at this point.
This is the first time, I think, in the series that all of our main characters on the La Serena know everyone else's story, too.
Yeah.
Everyone's more or less transparent.
Yeah. So we come to understand the Romulans were behind the Mars attack. You know, the Jat Vash are pulling strings to stop the... I mean, and like, that is, like, by itself, like, a totally amazing...
Yeah.
Fact. Like, it's been heavily implied all the way through the series, but... When you think about the fact that that is something that they did in spite of the fact that it compromised their ability to rescue all of the Romulan Star Empire from the supernova, like they were much more interested in stopping any synthetic life from being created.
That they were willing to sacrifice their own species, basically.
So the thing they're afraid of is fucking scary.
The bangers are dropped here in conversation at such a pace that you almost don't hear the part where Commodore O is a half Romulan, half Vulcan sleeper agent, like who started at the bottom and now she's there.
Yeah, yeah.
As the chief of security.
She worked her way up and she did it exactly right. They are having this conversation and Soji kind of disappears up to the command deck where she has... much like Wesley and Jim Shimoda, force-fielded herself in and taken over the ship.
Yeah. She feels homesick, but also good.
she's punching in coordinates to the Borg...
transwarp conduit.
Transwarp conduit system, right. I loved the detail that when she like walks away, they just show the table from up above and she's like smashed holes in it with her fists.
Yeah. Yeah. She really makes that moment about her.
Yeah.
Even though they're like going down the laundry list of awful things that the Romulans have done. Soji's pissed at the things that are her fault.
Yeah. So Rios has actually anticipated the idea that somebody might try and take over his private ship. So he's programmed a little failsafe in, which is he sings a Spanish nursery rhyme and it shuts everything down.
He sings Balamos, which is kind of a deep cut.
Yeah, yeah. Especially from his time and place, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it just doesn't seem like that's such a joyful, you know, celebration of life kind of song.
Yeah.
And he's just not that, he doesn't have that mood to him.
That's fun.
Yeah. Picard comes in here and says something that I really like, which is like, hey, you know, we've been trying to like do this our way. And maybe Soji is the one that we should be following here. Like,
right.
Why don't you put her in charge?
And so they do.
They begin to leave with Picard in the command chair, but this dialogue is so perfectly written.
Yeah.
It's modern dialogue in the future because it's very specifically the word choice of, I don't know how to work this.
Yeah, yeah.
Is something that our parents have said
right.
for years.
Yeah, this is your dad setting up email on his smartphone for the first time kind of dialogue.
Yeah. Back on the artifact, the XBs, those that have remained, are attacking Rizzo. They found Rizzo. They've taken her guard off the board, and they've pigpiled her.
Do you get the sense that she gets beamed out of the pigpile?
Absolutely do.
Yeah.
It took watching it a second time to see that, but yeah, at the bottom,
yeah,
it looks to be that she beams away.
Yeah, the first time I watched it, I was like, oh, they did something that made her glow inside. And
it felt very Walking Dead, this moment.
I never saw that show.
But the idea of a horde attacking one person and like tearing them limb from limb. And then very specifically, the camera angle pivoting to top down.
Yeah.
It felt a lot like that.
Back in the queen cell, Elnor is cheering on Seven of Nine as she prosecutes this counterattack, going, "Yas, queen, yas!" And then realizes that, like, now that she's taken the cube back over, he might be next. He asks if he's going to get assimilated.
He's so innocently asks this too. Like, there's no fear about it. It's more curiosity.
Yeah. What comes next?
Yeah.
Me dead? Okay.
It's hard to tell whether or not it's the Borg ship that does this, and I'm almost positive it is. Like, the ship chooses to release Seven of Nine from her station here, saying that she still has more work to do, as if there's kind of a crossing of awareness or intelligence.
Right. It's from her mouth. It's Annika still has work to do. But you get the sense that that's the collective speaking. And then when she's unplugged, it's back to...
If all of the vented Borgs are dead, I have a hard time figuring out who she's speaking for and to. Is the ship a life in the contextual sense that a Borg drone is?
I don't know. I also wonder, Borg drones, we've seen them on the dish of the Enterprise E walking around without spacesuits.
Suck them back in. Deploy the Borg straw.
Yeah.
Bring them back in.
Yeah. Just suck toilets and Borgs back into the cube as fast as you can.
They have jetpacks now? This show is just ruined. No one likes Star Trek anymore. The button on the episode is back in the La Serena. JL tells Rios, like, it's sort of late at night. You get the sense that it's Rios and JL enjoying an evening of solitude together.
Yeah, they're warping to the space butthole that will admit them to the transwarp network. And Picard is kind of trying to give Rios some framework. Like, you thought your captain was just a psychopath that killed everybody and you had to cover up this terrible crime of his and then tell everybody else that this man that you admired had gone totally nuts. You know, like the idea of Starfleet betrayed itself is kind of the thesis of this, right? Like like Commodore O being a Russian troll inside the government is true and bad, but the like Starfleet walked away from its values, whether or not Commodore O is a factor, like, and in the synthetic ban, it was a betrayal of Starfleet's values. And he just totally rejects the idea that this Seb Shineb thing is the death sentence that the Romulans believe it is. He's like, yeah, like that may have happened in the past. That may have really been bad for whatever civilization that was, but we're a hopeful people and we can write our own future.
Back when I used to work at Giant Aerospace Company, like one of the funny / stupid things that would always happen when you're living in Seattle is you say where you work and someone's like, oh, I know someone who works there. Do you know this person? Even though the organization is like 10,000 people.
Right.
And Rios and Picard have this moment when they're talking about Vandermeer and like
Captain Dr. Drew, please. It's clearly a photo of Dr. Drew.
And Picard's like, yeah, I knew him. And Rios is like, yeah, he was like a father to me. But, you know, he also really looked up to Marta Batanides. You know who she is, right?
Sounds familiar.
She was the cadet that Picard fucked in Tapestry.
Whoa.
Great callback.
Wow.
Isn't that awesome?
He also says that he was an ensign on the Reliant, which must be the Reliant C or something, right? Like,
I mean, you hope so. There's nothing left of the
cadets on the Reliant got blown into space, was he marooned on SETI Alpha 5 if he was an ensign on the Reliant?
I mean, a lot of unanswered questions here. I would feel like after the events of the Reliant, you might not want to christen another, like, they don't keep making Titanics, right? Is what I'm saying,
right? Yeah.
When they arrive at the transwarp conduit, we realize that they're not alone because that space butthole opens up, the La Serena goes through, and then another ship follows.
Yeah, it makes me think that the turning off the tracker maybe worked while Dr. Girardi was in her coma, but stopped working when she came back out of it.
Oh, interesting. Also, like when your ship looks like Van Halen's Frankenstein guitar, I think you know, like, I think you're pretty easy to find.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Like when you put a, like a wrap on your car and yeah. it you make it look chrome or something, you're not going to evade the cops.
Yeah, very eye-catching. You can't speed when your car looks like that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, did you like the episode, Adam?
It's going to be hard to dethrone the last episode in the Mount season one of Picard more for me, because all I ever want to be is wrapped up in Riker and Troy's loving arms.
Yeah.
But I think this one might be my second favorite episode of the series. So much happens in this ep. It feels like we're really racing toward the end of the season here.
Totally.
I felt a lot of catharsis in it. I think the episodes that I like the most are the ones where I feel the most, and this is an example of that. There were a lot of moments this episode where I did.
Yeah, some great Picard moments in this episode, and also just great episode for really feeling like we know this crew a lot better now.
Yes, it felt like a very galvanizing episode in that way.
Yeah, and I'm really going to be rooting for them as they enter the fray for these final two episodes.
Yeah, you and me both.
Do you want to see if we have any Priority One messages, Adam?
Gotta do that.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Friends of DeSoto, your priority at this time is to keep safe and think about how you can protect your health and the health of those around you.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself and Edward Larkin?
Edward Larkin! I did. My Edward Larkin for this episode is Raffi, just for the moment where she thinks she's talking to Rios, but is in fact talking to the emergency navigation hologram. I knew that was the emergency navigation hologram. Why didn't Raffi?
How does she not? I think she managed to replicate some wine.
She found some wine somewhere. Yeah. There was a bottle of Pisco that had gone unaccounted for.
You look great.
You clean up real nice, buddy boy. Did you have an Edward Larkin, Adam?
This one may surprise you. I'm going to give my Edward Larkin to JL.
Yeah.
My Larkin's going to Picard, and it's for a scene and a moment that delighted me greatly. Picard's "Do you believe in hell?" face, I believe, is my face. Like, we talk a lot about what a problem my face can be in certain circumstances, but there is a smirk that Picard gives in response to this question that I found so familiar and troubling. Picard may not believe in hell, but he believes in Feklar.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he's seen other versions of hell, certainly. But that kind of, like, he sort of pushes his chin back into his neck a little bit, like, you know, I'm not trying to throw shade on anyone else's religious beliefs, but personally, I feel like you're full of shit if you believe in hell.
I respect all people and all things, but you're a moron if you believe in that.
I believe in morality without religion.
Yeah.
So that take, Sir Patrick Stewart.
Banger.
Great physical take there.
Yeah.
Picard is my Edward Larkin.
I also want to give special Edward Larkin citation to Rios banging on the force field in the bridge.
That seems tough. Like, that's Doug Jones style mind body stuff that I think is more difficult than one would think to not make look silly.
Yeah, he made it look great.
Yeah.
It looked awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that just about does it for this episode. Next episode, the trailer for it seems entirely preoccupied on them getting to, I wrote down the name of the planet, but I cannot read my own handwriting. Candinia? Candini? Something like that. They go there and it looks like it's a crash landing because of some sort of orbital defense that turns the power off on the La Serena. Rios is going to be pissed.
This is not Grief World.
No.
This is Marriott Bonvoy World. This, I can't believe it. We're coming up to the end here.
I know. Two more episodes of Star Trek Picard. And then we still don't have release dates for season 3 Disco, but I've read that April is when it's probably getting released. So I'm guessing there will not be a big gap between them.
I am excited and nervous about what's to come because our friend who helps score the episodes actually discouraged us from coming to visit the studio where they were recording the score for these final episodes. And I kind of wonder what that means. I'm assuming that that's you don't want to come and ruin the surprise, but it could mean a lot of things.
It could mean a lot of things. We were invited to like literally sit in on the scoring session for episode 10.
Yeah.
And when we couldn't make it happen, he followed up with an email that was like, I'm glad you guys weren't there.
Yeah.
That has been eating at my brain ever since he said it.
It was just 4 days of single brass instruments.
All right, well, we're going to leave it with Rob's from here.
Get off your duff. Make yourself feel good. MaximumFun.org/join.
Take it away, Rob's.
The Greatest Discovery is a Maximum Fun podcast hosted by Benjamin Harrison and Adam Pranica. It's produced by me, Rob Schulte. Our theme music is by friend of DeSoto and YouTube sensation Adam Ragusea. The Greatest Discovery is made possible by the support of our listeners like you. Visit MaximumFun.org/join and pledge your support. If you'd like to discuss the show online, please use the hashtag GreatestDiscovery. You can find Ben on Twitter at BenjaminAHR, Adam is at CutForTime, and I'm at Rob K. Schulte. Thanks. We'll see you on the next episode of The Greatest Discovery.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.